Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
This is the D-Word podcast, where we talk dementia. Good to have your company here on the D-Word for some more dementia talk. My guest on this edition is Nicole Batch, an ageing and dementia expert from the United States, who I first got into contact with when she shared a post about the negative effects of changes to Medicaid and other health benefits being proposed by the US government. Nicole, pleasure to welcome you as my guest here on the D Word. We have a lot to talk about, I think. You're an ageing and dementia expert. I wonder, before we get into things, can you just give us a little bit of a story? How did you come to become involved in the whole dementia world?
Well, I think my story is similar to other people in that the field found me instead of the other way around. It was literally my first job out of high school. At high school, I worked in a retirement community for a period of time. But out of college, it was working in a grassroots Alzheimer's organization was my first job out of college.
Oh, that's where it all began, obviously developed from then. I mean, one of the things that brought us together, I saw an article about cuts to Medicaid and SNAP, Supplemental Nutritional Assistance Program, if I'm right. I'm in the UK. A lot of our listeners are outside the US, obviously, and don't kind of realise what those things mean. I mean, before we go into the fact there's going to be cuts to them, can you just give us a brief explanation of about Medicaid and SNAP for those people outside the US?
So I'll give you kind of a brief overview of those programs. I'm not an expert in specifically within those programs, and I can give you lots of organizations to go to get the statistics and the formal things. But I'd say most of the conversations that I've had with families over the years that I've been in the field of dementia and gerontology and aging is that most people don't understand how the services work when they run out of money. And over the last almost 30 years I've been in the field, it's changed a lot. You know, certainly there are, you know, new sectors that have come into the field, like home care. Home care didn't exist in the way that it exists now when I started in the field, and different services that are available. And what typically happens is that people are looking for services to stay at home as long as possible, of course. They're usually not seeking services until they're in crisis, unfortunately. There are many, at least in the United States, there have been over the last couple of decades, many services in local communities that can sometimes be underutilized. But then the people who do utilize the services utilize a lot of those services because they realize how much they're needed. And if somebody with dementia is going to stay at home for as long as possible, they're going to need community-focused services that keep them there, keep them out of the hospital. We've got people with dementia who have return hospital visits and things when things can be better managed at home. We have things like you mentioned SNAP, but there are other examples of SNAP. SNAP is our kind of our welfare program for meals, for people being able to get food assistance. But we have several programs for meals, including other, you know, Medicaid and other departments within our government that provide those services. And for people who are even mildly forgetful about eating or cooking or shopping or the different things that they need to do, the steps that it takes to cook, having that availability of at least one meal a day being delivered to your home can be the difference between somebody, you know, not eating and not having the nutrition they need to live a better quality of life. You know, so it all starts with food and shelter, right? And those are the two most important things that people have to have before we build onto our dementia services, which includes home care, which might include residential facility care if people need that, which might include arts programs, which might include support groups and psychosocial programs. So all of these programs are wonderful, and they build on top of that ability for people with dementia and their family caregivers to have the best quality of life possible. But when and this has been happening for years under multiple different administrations, there are disagreements about how to spend government money for people who don't have the resources to buy it. When people need long-term care in this country, the average cost is $100,000 a year. You know, even people who are potentially middle class would spend that down in a couple of years if they need that service, and then they go on Medicaid, which, you know, is formally known as our welfare program, in order to pay for long-term care for, you know, particularly older people with disabilities. But people with dementia make up a good chunk of the number of people who live in residential care. So the politics around how to pay for care is very important politics, because these are people who can't often defend themselves by the time that they're needing that level of service. In the mild stages, people with dementia have a voice, as you know, because you facilitated groups with them as well. But as they move and progress through the condition, they have less of a voice to defend themselves and you know, and to go down to town halls and government offices to protest like other people are doing across the country right now.
It kind of seems that, you know, it's fair. There are equalities with the situation in this country where still we're yet to get to grips with what we term social care, and that kind of distance from the NHS, and the run of two separate budgets, and there are always plenty of arguments between who should pay for what and what comes out of what. But it does seem to me, with making cuts to things like Medicaid, etc., you're kind of taking away the bottom blocks of the building, aren't you, and waiting for it to collapse.
Yeah, it's very scary what's happening, and I hope it turns itself around soon to really help people. And I know that there are people out there who are working hard to turn the tide and at least educate citizens in our country about what these services do, because I think most people don't know about the services until they need them, until they're in crisis. And then they're like, well, where am I going to get the help to do this? Where am I going to get the help to pay for this service, or to, you know, to get food if I need food, and where do I go? So I think that's the biggest problem in both of our societies, that is that lack of really what is the government supposed to be doing? And then where to access what the government is doing in order to be supportive of citizens who really need it the most.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans, meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Here on Newgate Health Radio, our MD, Johan Engelfritz, who started the station over a decade ago, is about to publish his first book. It tells his story, reversing cancer, you caused it, and you can reverse it, and explores the powerful connection between diet, pH balance, and disease prevention. It's out on the 7th of May and will be available from all major booksellers. My guest on this edition of the D-Word podcast is Nicole Batch. You know, I read something, I think, I'll just tell you, I don't know whether I found this on your LinkedIn page or somewhere anyway, but it said that your aim is to develop a more collaborative partnership between academia, NGOs, the private sector and the policy sector, and which is something I'm absolutely 100% behind. But it kind of strikes me there's a lot of organisations out there doing good things, but that don't always join together and don't always know what the other one's doing.
Correct. We do have a lot of silos. And I go back and forth between this concept of, you know, you brought up the NHS and social care. And, you know, I go back and forth between integration being something that's possible, but integration, full integration of these organizations and silos worries me a little, because if you have one factor that has more power than the other, if there are budget cuts, whoever has the most power cuts the budget of the other half. And so, you know, I've been in lots of room with doctors, and they, of course, care about the medical side of dementia and diagnosis and treatments. And I think all that's very important. But if you give them the keys to social care, they're going to cut social care because they don't understand it. And they don't understand what people need. And the same thing with the silos, with the different institutions that exist, at least in the United States. Those silos are often, you know, it's a vast network. It's often disconnected. I think there are collaborations and partnerships at grant levels to try to work together. But each one of those institutions also does something slightly different and equally important, right? And they represent different sides of our field, and different aspects of where people can go to get the help. And while I personally believe that, you know, nonprofit services are valuable and probably one of our most undervalued and most important services within our aging sector, we can't do it without the other sectors. We can't do it without for-profit. We can't do it without government. We can't, like, it all has to work together. But people's basic needs should not ever be questioned. You know, people's basic needs for housing and food and basic care, and then that ability to build on those needs after that can improve people's quality of life drastically. You know, if we don't have a cure for dementia and it's not coming anytime soon, better treatments may be coming soon, but doesn't look like a cure is coming soon. And that's a really complicated topic because there are, you know, dozens and dozens of different kinds of causes of dementia. Then how can we continue to support people throughout their journey of dementia, regardless of what stage you're in, regardless of where they live, and regardless of what setting they might be in? So, you know, whether they're living at home, whether they need, and I don't know if the UK has robust adult day services, but adult day services are an important component of people being able to stay at home, especially if they have family caregivers who are working during the day. That safe place to go, that place that is a good routine for the person, that place where they can socialize with other people. And I don't think we give enough credit to socialization, that ability to just, regardless of what interventions might take place in these settings, just the ability to get together with other people is important for people's quality of life. And so in the United States, we have lots of senior centers and adult day programs and community-based environments for people to access. They don't always know about them. They're not always ready to visit them. Oh, that senior center place, I'm not old enough to go visit one of those places. And then senior centers in and of themselves, when I worked in one years ago, they often leave out people with memory problems because of the liability issues of people with memory problems, not, you know, needing supervision because if something happens to them in that environment. We, you know, the United States is a lawsuit heavy country. So there are those concerns from operating a business perspective as well. So, I mean, we could talk for hours, Pete, about all of the different challenges that we face in our field. But what I will say is that there are a lot of good people who do this work, who care about people with dementia, who care about caregivers, who care about our systems and care about improving them despite the challenges. People have a right to be angry, particularly in this country over decades, you know, certain things have been cut over time. But I'm not sure that the current environment is the way to, you know, slash and burn everything, throw the baby out with the bathwater. There's a, you know, legitimate way to go about, you know, thinking through what services are needed and what is that hierarchy of services that are needed so that we can provide what people want to do and enjoy as much as they can. I can't take away someone's dementia, but can we still bring someone joy? Can we still bring someone an opportunity to, you know, to do things that they still can do that might need to be adapted throughout their condition?
I mean, it kind of strikes me that, you know, the people at the bottom, as you were saying earlier, don't really know about these services until they need them. The people at the top don't particularly understand how important all these services are, and stuck in the middle are good people like yourself and all the people that do understand and trying to do the work. And it's a case of kind of joining it together, isn't it? I mean, how do you get it up the trees so those people who are in charge of the purse strings and the policy actually understand the significance of all this stuff?
Well, I think it's hearing more from local individuals, more from local organizations. Unfortunately, some organizations are limited in what they're able to do on a policy and politics level. We have to make sure that things are neutral when we communicate that. Unfortunately, the services themselves have become political, which should never happen. Like, the services should exist regardless of you know, who's in power. But I think hearing more of those local individual stories about how services impact their daily lives is the most beneficial things that a policymaker can hear. And right now too, you know, I think where it's kind of gone off the rails a little bit is that those large institutions have now become the voice for the local people, and they've become disconnected from the local needs and what people actually need. And so they have their own agendas and narratives to keep their funding going. And that's been real unfortunate because, you know, they're missing a vast, you know, number of people who they could be tapping to tell an important story about services that are needed in local communities. A lot of large organizations have even started eliminating their local services in the name of advocacy, but then you have to start asking, well, what are they advocating for if they're not advocating for the needs of people who live in their local communities? And so that's, you know, I'm going to get in trouble for some of the things I'm saying during this podcast, but I have to say them because it's just become so frustrating over decades. And I've been worried about this for many years, and, you know, written about it and talked about it in other venues about the concerns of local services, and particularly things like meals programs. You know, when I sit in, when I didn't tell you earlier, is that when I got my doctorate after 16 years of working in the field, and I did that mid-career because I was frustrated working for local, you know, working in local programs and not feeling like I was able to meet the needs of the people that we serve. And so I thought getting that doctorate would help get me into some policy room so that I could have a bit more influence. But unfortunately, you know, what I found there was that it's just the perpetuation of the funding streams for their own organizations rather than, you know, looking directly at what more can we do in local communities so that people have the services that they need. So, and some organizations are better at it than others. Not everybody's a bad actor here. And I even think individuals within certain organizations are still trying hard to change those systems from within. But the, you know, the politics of the day has had people kind of move on bandwagons. You know, what's the next bandwagon? What do the funders want to fund? So it's almost like, is it mission before money or money before mission? And people have lost an understanding of, you know, mission first, and then we fund what we need rather than we're, you know, here's the money over here in this pot. Everybody needs to dictate their money for this purpose over here. And I'll give you an important example. An important example here, when I came back and I did my PhD in the UK, I came back to the US, and my PhD was working directly with people with dementia, with mild dementia, and trying to foster their voices in various ways to find out what they need and how they define their needs. But I came back to the US and I looked for funding and was immediately told we're funding brain health or caregiving. Now, those are two very important subjects. So I'm not going to disagree that those are important subjects, but I think we find that we have to create what we think is necessary based on all this data I collected and try to fit it into someone else's narrative in order to get the funding. And the brain health funding has been mostly preventive focused for well older people, how to care for their brains and eat right and exercise and, you know, get a good night's sleep, all those basic things that we know. And caregiving also very, very important. But sometimes caregiving also doesn't allow the person with dementia's voice to stand up, and not because it's not well-intentioned. You know, caregivers are very stressed and they're trying to do the best they can. And I don't want to add any additional stress to caregivers by saying you're doing it wrong, because they're not doing it wrong. They're doing the best they can. But sometimes in order to protect the person they're caring for, they talk over the person. They don't allow the person to kind of be their own person with adaptations and adapting to their abilities along the way. So it's that it's what you said earlier about having all of these voices are important. All of these different silos are important. And what I'd like to see in an ideal world is that these silos are all equal, and that equality amongst the silos and everybody having an equal voice, I think, is the biggest challenge, because it's always about, well, who's the most important organization in the room, or who's the most important person in the room, and what do they want, rather than trying to find actually all of these systems that exist are important. And there seems to be no limit of money for rich people. There seem to be a lot of billionaires, so there's money. And why is it so hard for that money to be used for the needs that we have? And so that's my personal opinion. But I think the money's there. I just don't think it's being collected in the right way in order to actually meet the needs of citizens who are out there voting, no matter what country they live in.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans, meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shape the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, Learn why Living All Out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.
UK House Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
We've got plenty of great guests lined up over the coming weeks, but we're always on the lookout for interesting stories. So if you have one to share with our listeners, do let us know by emailing tdwradio@gmail.com. This week I'm chatting to ageing and dementia expert Nicole Batch. Yeah, I do. Absolutely. You know, it's not only your view, Nicole, believe me. It's a lot of people's view. And also, going back to what you said, by the way, no one's going to criticise you for talking total common sense. And that's what we've been hearing. One thing, you know, in terms of dementia, I spent a career in public health and I never heard the D word mentioned in terms of dementia. Everybody talked about cancer, heart disease, diabetes, et cetera, et cetera. Do you think some people in a policy setting, unfortunately, look at dementia and the fact that we can't cure it and write it off because, oh, well, these people don't matter because they've got a condition we can't cure? And they look entirely down the medical route instead of looking at all those social things that we've been talking about that can give people a better quality of life?
Wow, that's a really complicated question. And I'll separate the two. I'll separate my answers into two parts, because you said the D word, which brings up the area of the stigma of dementia itself as a medical condition, and then looking at it as a medical condition versus a social condition. So when I started in the field in a grassroots Alzheimer's organization, you know, in my mid-20s, I would often go to health fairs in a local senior center or a local community center or a hospital or whatnot, and stand behind the table, the Alzheimer's table, and there would be a nurse taking blood pressure at the table next to me, and there might be a podiatrist looking at, you know, people's feet at the table next to me over here, and, you know, there might be a table with, you know, diabetes educators across the way, and they, people would literally go get their blood pressure tested. Then they would walk across the room, cross over, and then walk over to the podiatrist, completely skipping our booth, because they didn't even want to be seen talking to or thinking about dementia. And interestingly enough, I mean, back in those days, people really thought that it might be contagious. It might be something you might catch. And we know a lot better now, and there's a lot less stigma of dementia. And a lot of that stigma has been reduced because of the medical focus on dementia. So I don't want to underscore, you know, the fact that because there has been a search for a cure, we're talking more about it. Okay. But I also agree with you when you say, as far as the medical and the social care and balancing those two, that because we can't, you know, because there's an excess focus on curing it, we're not focused on what do we do with people after they start to have memory problems? How do we care for those? What is this? What should the system look like? And if we could get that right, then people might be less fearful, not that they shouldn't fear dementia like they do cancer or other diseases, but that they know they're going to be safe and they know they're going to be cared for by a system that cares about them. We're missing a lot of empathy in our society today. And I think caring for our most vulnerable is the most special thing that one can do to improve quality of life for everybody. If we get it right for the most vulnerable, then everybody wins, because we've created a system of around empathy and around care. And not that it's not important to continue to do research and for better treatments, but dementia is a medical condition with huge social implications. And the social implications of dementia, especially after, and I would say after diagnosis, but that needs to be unpacked, after people start experiencing memory problems, because not everybody gets a diagnosis of dementia, that is where we really need to be focusing our efforts.
And I think one of the things is, I talk to you, I speak to people all across the world, and there's so many commonalities between everybody saying the same thing. And even for somebody listening to this who hadn't even entered into this world before, and for me, 6 years of listening to people say the same thing, just leads you to believe, well, this must be right because everybody is saying exactly the same thing. We've got a big jigsaw here, but we need to join all those pieces together, and we need to put medical issues and social issues on a level playing field.
There's too much competition between the silos. And that's a big problem. And there's too much competition for funding when there really shouldn't be. Because we can still do both. We can still look for better treatments and improve quality of life. And there, like as you've interviewed, there are dozens, if not hundreds, of people who have been looking at improving quality of life over many, many years. Every once in a while, someone will have a little bit of success, and then the politics change. And sometimes it's societal politics and sometimes it's institutional politics. And so something shifts and then everybody kind of goes quiet for a while, and then everybody gets loud again and then goes quiet again and goes loud and goes quiet. And so I think now with what we're seeing with how easily and quickly things can change for the worse, that maybe this is an opportunity for people. One, to recognize, at least in the United States, what government can do and should be doing for its citizens. And maybe that will help other countries look at, different models. Not that the United States has all the answers in dementia, because we don't. There are lots of wonderful countries out there that are doing amazing things in this space. But I think at least for my neighbors who I know, are cons have conservative values, and where I grew up had conservative values, I only changed my politics after I started working in this field. L quite literally, I was raised one way, and I started working in the field of dementia, quickly recognizing that people weren't getting their needs met with our political, with our policies and our in our society. So, I mean, that's just been my personal realm of how my own politics has developed. But I hope that people are starting to recognize, because those government workers who've been fired are now speaking out. This is what I did. I worked at a US national park, and here was my job. I worked for the CDC, and this is what my job was. I don't think people really, they blame government wherever you are. People tend to blame government, but they don't realize that government is made up of people. And individually, those people have gotten an education to do that job. They've dedicated their careers to learning how to do that job. And they've been trying to do their best within a lot of broken systems. So I'm not going to disagree, the systems are broken, but they can be fixed. And I hope that this will bring recognition to that, and I hope we can get there sooner than later.
Sooner than later, indeed. I mean, I guess it all starts, what we were talking about probably 20 minutes ago or whatever, at grassroots level is people actually understanding the issues and people understanding in terms of dementia how they can support someone living with dementia in their local community. And some of the simple things that, we have talked about budgets, but there's a lot of simple stuff out there. It doesn't cost any money. It's just knowing how you can support someone in your community, isn't it?
Well, I think what you're talking about now might be more volunteerism and, different community-based programs. And I think we've gone a long way away from volunteerism. And I think for a couple of different reasons, and I'm very pro-volunteer programs and community support and grassroots. I think they're so important. But I also think there's a limit to what we need to be asking people to do for free, knowing that the systems are because volunteers are now compensating for broken systems, and that shouldn't happen either. And so there's that. There's also the ability of family caregivers and people living with dementia asking for help. And so I haven't done a lot of research in this area, but my observation in the field is that there's this pride shame balance of, you know, feeling, especially the caregivers, nobody can care for this person like I can. I don't need help. If I ask for help, that means I'm a failure. Versus, you know, the shame of asking for help, but not realizing that asking for help actually empowers you and gives you the support system you need so you can be a better caregiver and you can have the time and the mental space and maybe the emotional space as well. You know, caregiving is physically, emotionally, and financially draining. And I think that carrying that load is you know, very stressful for caregivers. And for people with dementia, asking for help might mean they lose their independence. And so fighting for that autonomy. So people don't ask for help out of that kind of pride, shame, you know, narrative when help isn't meant to cast them away into some facility, you know, or institution, or back in the 1960s and 70s asylums. I think people still have this memory of what we used to do to people with disabilities and including dementia. You know, we used to send them away into those state-run facilities in the United States. And those were terrible, awful places for people. And which is why deinstitutionalization happened in the 1980s and 90s to get people out into community, and why these community programs, you know, really became robust in the 80s and 90s. And then over the last 20 years have had the budgets progressively cut and cut and cut and cut and cut. And there's only so much blood you can squeeze out of a turnip, right? You know, there's nothing left to squeeze. And there are some political, you know, politics out there that want these systems to fail so that they can say, see, look, it failed. We need to privatize everything. But we also know that privatizing everything isn't the answer either. So that's why these things need to be in balance. We can't do it alone. We need different systems in different communities based on what the resources are in those communities. If you look at the comparison between an urban community, a suburban community, and a rural community, we don't know what the resources are in every single community. We can't standardize everything across every country, because there are unique resources in those communities that need to be pulled together in a way that's useful to the local citizens who live there.
Well, Nicole, it's been absolutely fascinating. As you said, we could talk for hours. I know that unfortunately time's bringing us to a close on this particular edition, but we will definitely get you back on the show and we will talk some more. But for now, anyway, thank you so much for being my guest on the D Word.
Thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it.
Thanks to Nicole for providing plenty of food for thought. I hope you'll join me again on the podcast later in the year. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word podcast.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Cleveland is where the urban meets the outdoors, where cultural celebrations meet rabid sports fans, meet the symphony, where nobody goes hungry and everybody loves music. Fueled by passion, we are the land for life. From rich history to hidden gems, the Legends of the Land podcast shares the real stories from real Clevelanders that shaped the city. From iconic chefs to grassroots changemakers, sports heroes to creative visionaries, learn why living all out is in Cleveland's DNA. Go to thisisCLE.com/podcast.